Cairo Knights, Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Soft Rock Wednesday. It's like a holiday in the middle of every single week. Producer Anderson, Soft Rock.
I love it.
Soft. What? Why can't I say that? Soft Rock Wednesday. It's like a tongue twister.
It is.
You know what? I had a question of the hour. By the way, is political nuance dead in the United States? Are we done with political nuance? 98973. But before we get to that, the biggest news story of the day is Mr. Frank Shires is back from vacation.
No, yep. Thank you.
Yep.
My staycation. Yep. I'm back.
Frank, I got to say, Mr. Shires, we talked about you all day Monday. The whole show
really?
Was only Frank Shires. All day Tuesday, we did nothing but Frank Shires. Me, producer Anderson, Shane on the ones and twos. And that's all we did for 6 total hours of broadcasting. We just were upset that you weren't here.
You're very kind.
We talked about how we could get a deeper voice.
Yeah, that's it. We need to get somebody who has a real voice.
We need a man's voice around here.
Yeah,
we all have children's voices. Me, Shane, producer Anderson.
Yep.
It sounds like a bunch of 12-year-olds yelling into microphones. And then finally, Daddy comes home. Frank Shire comes home.
I was listening to you guys last couple of nights. It didn't sound like you were suffering at all. You did just fine. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much, Frank Shires. And it's always good to have you back. Again, question of the hour, is political nuance in the United States dead? Are we done being nuanced when we talk about politics, whether you're on the left, whether you're on the right? 98973 State Roofing text line. The reason that I ask this question is because I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today, my very, very good friend, and talking about Biden and Harris and the pros and the cons and so on and so forth. And then he says, I say, why are you so for Kamala Harris? And he says, well, it's time for a black woman to be president. And I thought, well, that's not what she's running for, first and foremost. But the other thing that I thought about was, maybe I'm just so out of touch. Maybe I just don't know what's going on. Maybe I'm totally wrong about all this. But I always thought that we would just want the best person for the job. Seems like that doesn't really happen that much anymore.
It's a little old-fashioned, Jack. Come on.
Old-fashioned. But I always thought that you would just want whoever was the most qualified, whoever had the best, most recent relevant, you know, evidence to show that they were going to be good for the job. And I thought, is having that opinion bad? Is having that a nuanced opinion about it wrong now, where now we just have to find someone who checks the boxes and they're good enough. They fulfill that requirement. So again, 98973. State Roofing text line. Tell me if it's dead in the United States. I don't think political nuance is dead. I'd like to think it's still alive and that people can say, well, I might be on the left, but I also think a little bit like this on the right, and I might be on the right, but sometimes I think like this, a little bit on the left. I'd like to think that people are like that, but maybe I'm totally, totally wrong about that, producer Anderson.
I don't know.
I'd like to think I'm not, though.
Yeah. Political nuance, man. You could ask. We could have the whole show about that, to be completely honest, and really not get a full, complete answer what it is. But you know, I think with everything kind of going on, everyone's really trying to choose what side they're on. But it's just keep getting more and more of a divide in the middle. So hopefully that there is something that is still, you know, present in today's world. But you know, well, I guess we'll find out.
He kind of came about owning people, like the left is going to own Donald Trump,
yeah,
or Donald Trump's going to own the liberals. And
you're,
I always
it's always like talking about how you're going to justify the other side, or how we're going to pull people from the middle, or like it's just all a game about how we're going to get more votes in that kind of way, and not like, okay, this person will do the job in the best way.
Yeah, and I always thought that that's what everybody wanted. I just thought, well, you know, let's just all try to. See, I thought everybody wanted to prosper, but I guess now it's all just
Again,
a big
just
game
too old
for somebody to win.
You're too old fashioned.
Too old fashioned.
Yeah.
I'm secretly a 70-year-old man. Let's get to the big three.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
So more affordable housing is coming to Seattle, says Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin.
Today we're going to be announcing that we will create 600 new units of permanent supportive housing in 6 different buildings across the city.
The Seattle Office of Housing is investing $60 million to build 600 new apartment units of permanent housing for the homeless in response to COVID-19. We just heard from Mayor Jenny Durkin. Officials said that the new homes will be in addition to the 3,700 permanent supportive housing units currently in service and the more than 350 units under construction that have been awarded funding. A lot of money. I was trying to look at the nuance of it, trying to look at both sides of the
right.
argument.
The question of the hour.
And it seemed question of the hour is political nuance dead. And I found some data from earlier this year. One study says, about the homelessness in Seattle says that there's an estimated need of 9,089 new units to decrease crowding in shelters and bring people inside. 9,000 new units. So when you talk about the homeless problem in Seattle, seems like that's a pretty nuanced issue, pretty difficult issue when you've got something like 12,500 homeless people in Seattle.
I would say so.
And out of that number, producer Anderson, let me see if I got that. 3,558 are considered unsheltered. That means no car, no tent, no nothing.
So that's such
out
perpetually
on
homeless.
Perpetually homeless. And it again, if you think about it in a kind of a nuanced way, wouldn't it be a good idea to actually just get people inside? I realize it's very expensive, yeah. And I realize that people on the right don't like to talk about we don't like to spend money. But this is a group of people who, a lot of these people are, you know, I think a third of them are shown to be addicted to some kind of substance.
Right.
Additionally, another third of the homeless youth in King County have been in the child welfare system. Seems like there's this wraparound effect with foster care kids where they turn 18 and then they get kicked out and then they have nowhere to go, contributing to the homeless problem. So you ask yourself, well, what's a nuanced way we could tackle that, right? How could we possibly... This thing that seems so tremendous, and it seems like such a big problem. How could we fix it other than just kind of throwing money at it? Well, maybe 600 units is a start. Maybe. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Let's move to... Let's go to number two.
Number two.
So many Seattle police officers say they've been rocked to the core by the resignation of Chief Carmen Best. Eric Mitchell, a 40-year SPD veteran, tells Gian Ursula that he's known Best since she started on the force, and she puts her heart into the organization.
I'm saddened. We had heard something like this was cooking a while ago, but we didn't think it was going to happen this soon and this quick. But it's sad to see her go, and I feel that the council broke her.
So what's next for the Seattle Police Department? After Chief Carmen Best's abrupt announcement that she's retiring next month, Deputy Chief Adrian Diaz is set to take reins as interim chief. Diaz has served in the department for 23 years, and the Seattle Times notes that he began his career on a bike unit and has served as an undercover cop as well as an investigator in the Investigator Bureau. Mayor Jenny Durkan says that he's well known in the Seattle community.
Anyone who has seen Adrian in any community events knows how deep his roots go. They all know him, and he knows them, their children, and their families.
Diaz praises outgoing Chief Carmen Best.
She's been a great mentor, friend, and chief.
He'll lead the SPD at a time when police nationwide are facing challenges.
Our department has had rough times during my career, but I believe this is the most challenging time in our history.
So I was trying to figure out, well, I wonder what about BLM? How does Black Lives Matter feel about Chief Best leaving? She's,
she was a
figurehead since 2018, first black female police chief on the force. By almost all accounts, she did a pretty good job at her was pretty effective in the position. And so I actually found that Black Lives Matter Seattle released a statement yesterday. They said, "Today's news of the retirement of Chief Carmen Best is a loss. It does nothing to further our fight for authentic police accountability and the safety of black lives. That the first black woman to hold the position of Chief of Police of the Seattle Police Department has been forced out of her job by the Seattle City Council. We demand the city council stop prioritizing performative action that solely suggests the appearance of change." Wow. I would have never thought. Right. That seems like, again, difficult for me to say this, but BLM showing a pretty nuanced opinion, right?
Yeah.
Saying, hey, you know, we don't like the police, but Chief Best was our
wrong
person.
That
was wrong. That was our lady. So, again, 989-73, State Roofing Text Line. Am I wrong about this? Is political nuance dead in the United States, or are we all just kind of trying to figure this out together? Let's get to number three.
Number three.
As many expected, Seattle's school board has decided to reopen online only this fall. Superintendent Denise Juneau has been pushing for that move and says educators have been preparing for it. The Seattle School Board voted unanimously to begin the fall academic year remotely as districts continue to grapple with how to restart classes amid the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. The plan passed by the board leaves the door open for the creation of outdoor in-person classes and will still need to be negotiated with the teachers' union to suss out the specifics of how fully remote learning will look in practice. Every school district across Western Washington has a different set of challenges for reopening in the fall of 2020 as it navigates the effects of coronavirus on the students and the staff. The State Office of Public Instruction has given the districts general guidelines based on data from health officials, but has left the details up to each district. You can find the complete list of districts and their statements and all that fun stuff at mynorthwest.com. It is an extensive list, Producer Anderson.
Really?
Vast, yeah. It's because different superintendents released different kinds of information. They were trying to, because it's so, again, nuanced. There's a lot of complexity going into students and teachers and how we're going to do this. And some are remote learning, some of them are going to be open.
Well, and each school has a different situation too, with the amount of kids it has and where it is exactly in the Washington school and like in this setting and everything. So there's going to be a lot of different kind of ways to go about this, and hopefully the schools will kind of figure out what's best for each of them.
Yeah, and I do think that I've been pretty staunch supporter of go back to school.
Yeah.
I've been that guy.
Yeah.
So, but if a district decides what's best for its students and what's best for its the parents and all that other stuff, if that's what they decide what they want to do, it's kind of one of those things where your hands are kind of tied.
Yeah.
You can either put your kids in private school, maybe you could try homeschooling. I my understanding is that across the nation, some districts are saying, we're going to be giving you homeschooling packages, but that doesn't say much to the parents who actually have to go back to work or the parents who aren't working remotely from home. How do you navigate that? Complex issues, Producer Anderson. That's been on my mind almost all day today.
It's
navigating complex issues without getting heated, without getting yelly, without getting, in your face, this is what we got to do. How do we navigate this as a society?
Well, in schools is a tough one because, there's not really a right answer. Everyone wants to go back and be in-person learning. Everyone kind of knows, that's way more effective. But also, everyone kind of realizes that this is one way, a very, key way that this virus can spread. So it's a way that we can kind of limit it in that sort of sense. So it's a tool that we can use, going back to school or not, to really kind of determine how we can progress through this coronavirus as a society.
We're going to touch on that in the 8 o'clock hour. We have a whole list of stories about how exactly we're going to get through this coronavirus thing, and also is coronavirus driving people crazy? Just the idea of it. But we do have some pretty good news here. I did want to bump this up from good news, just so everybody knows. Primary turnout in Washington State is the highest it has been in decades. In more than five decades, 55% of the state's 4.6 million voters returned ballots for last week's election. And that, to me, is just amazing that now, I wonder if COVID-19, the primary or the elections in November, this is kind of the indicator of where things are going, that people are now getting more and more engaged in the political process because they do want to say, hey, I have thoughts about this, and I want to let everybody know, or I want to cast my vote and be proud of that fact, considering that voter turnout had been down significantly. If you look at the stats in 2016, some of the lowest voter turnout you could have ever seen, because everybody thought, well, Hillary Clinton's just going to win, and then she didn't. And so now I wonder if people are saying, well, I feel like maybe they said they might either I messed up in 2016, or other people saying, well, I really want Trump to win in 2020, so there's this idea that, yeah, I'm going to go vote, and the numbers show it. And I think that that's just amazing. What are people saying, Producer Anderson? I got the text line up as well. Is political nuance dead?
Yeah. I would say not, to be honest, at least from what I'm seeing. There's a lot of different opinions here that are kind of being shared, and the different outlooks that I'm seeing from a lot of the texters is really, really interesting. There's a couple people that are saying... you mentioned about the BLM Seattle statement about Carmen Best's resignation / retirement. 253 says, well, then maybe Black Lives Matter shouldn't have demanded the defunding of police department, which is what forced out Carmen Best in the first place.
Yep.
So there is a little bit of a overlapping and two sides to the story that BLM's trying to get out, because they did demand, they made those demands pretty public, that they wanted the police department defunded. But then when Carmen Best cited that that was the reason that she was stepping down, they said that that was not the right thing. So it's a little bit of a confusing situation, and I think most people are kind of pointing out that you know, there's definitely some steps that were taken that led to Carmen Best stepping down, not just her not really having thick skin because of her salary getting lowered. I think that's just not really relevant.
360 says, I will not vote for a president because of sex or color, but a person who is qualified. So sad where our USA is. Everyone knows Biden is not in a good mental place. Not any fault of his. Even Democrats did not back Harris. All know she will have to take over if they win the presidency. I'd like to appreciate that person's nuanced opinion.
So and far, that's what I'm your whole question has been answered. It looks like the political nuance is not dead.
Well, I hope that it isn't, because when I look at the news every morning and every afternoon, and I take in just the news cycle on a daily basis, my fear is that the punditry is leading people in a particular direction, that this kind of, you know, right side, left side thing is drawing people away from each other.
Yep.
Yeah, to the point where, you know, my very good friend says, you know, oh yeah, it's just time for a black woman to be president, without actually thinking about, one, that she's actually been, she's trying to be vice president, but two, but two, maybe it's a Freudian slip on his part, given Joe Biden's mental state, but two, this idea that again, wouldn't you just want the person, couldn't we all just agree that, well, I just want the best person for the job because I love my country and I love my countrymen, and I just want the person who's most fit to be the best leader. That's just my thought on it. Coming up on Cairo Nights, we're going to be talking about a shop, a local a store that's blaming the defunding of the police on its closure. You're listening to Cairo Nights. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back after this.
Understand coronavirus.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Soft Rock Wednesday. Let's take a holiday in the middle of the week, Producer Anderson. Wednesday, soft rock.
Love it.
I'm into it.
I love it. It's the best feeling.
So one of the things that everyone's been concerned about with COVID-19 has been businesses. How is COVID-19 affecting businesses? We covered last week that something like 16,000 businesses had closed during the shutdowns and the ensuing lockdowns and all that other kind of stuff. And I was perusing the Seattle subreddit, as I do every afternoon, perusing, and came across this story. A Seattle tea shop blames downtown closure on efforts to defund the police. And I thought to myself, I don't know. Two and two make four on that one. I'm not too sure. But in a recent interview with local Fox affiliate Q13, the owners of local tea shop mini chain Steepology, Andrea and Joe Raitzer, say that they permanently closed their downtown location, citing the city council's effort to decrease the budget for the Seattle Police Department as a major factor in the decision. They later clarified to Eater Seattle, which is where this was printed, that the shop closure happened before the council officially voted to pass the budget amendments, and that they had nixed a plan to relocate to Westlake Center due to the full-on vote itself. They went on to say that what the city council has done has absolutely been more detrimental to our business than a global pandemic by far. Absolutely. That's what Joe told Q13. The couple mentioned that they supported police reform and the protest, but Andrea said our ability to express ourselves and protest what we believe in now has been completely overtaken by violence and rioting and a complete lack of respect for each other. And I made this argument a couple days ago. I firmly believe that a healthy police force makes for a healthy community, which makes for healthy businesses, which makes for healthy society in general. And when you begin to chip away at the police force, that makes business owners uneasy. It makes them say, oh, well, can I have my business open downtown? People begin to become paranoid, especially if we look at the damage that happened during the protests on Capitol Hill. You have arson, you have shootings, you have assaults. And so business owners, I believe, in Washington and across the nation are saying to themselves, how can I dump tons of money into my business? How can I invest into my business if my deal with the city is going to be broken, if the police aren't going to be there to protect my business? And then I went down, after thinking all this, I went down in the comments and I saw that people were saying that Steepology before COVID-19 was already not doing well. A lot of local people were saying, well, that business just wasn't doing well to begin with. There were maybe three or four people in there at any particular time, that they had never gone in there, and that it, you know, they were trying to make that the reason. They were saying, well, these people are just using the defunding of the police as a reason to leave. They're scapegoating the city council's decision. But I'm not sure, because when I think about what they're saying, if I was a business owner in downtown Seattle and I look at the way that the police were kind of restricted and the handcuffs, for lack of a better word, that were put on policing for the protests, if you want to call them that, I wouldn't want to do it. I wouldn't want to dump potentially millions of dollars or at least hundreds of thousands of dollars into a business without the reassurance that if someone was breaking my windows, that police would come up and say, hey, that's private property. You can't do that. You simply can't do that. So the people who are all for defunding the police, you know, you hear some people say 50%, extremists say 100%. My question to them would be, then what do I tell the business owner? What do I tell the person who is let's say they've been there for 30 years. Let's say they've been there for 35 years. And now all of a sudden they're being told, well, you can't depend on the police anymore. Just can't. Why? Because we took away all their money. And if someone's breaking down your business, that's on you. Or as some people have said, I've heard a lot of people say this, and it's so disgusting. Some people say, oh, well, their insurance company will take over. Their insurance company will make up the costs. And I think, well, is that any reason to destroy someone's life work potentially, or destroy somebody's dream because their insurance company may or may not pick up the tab? So when we think about defunding the police, or when people make that proclamation, I think of the little guy. I think of the guy who's got his business. I even think of businesses like Target or Costco, who were ransacked during the quote unquote protests as well. Think of businesses like that. Like if I want to open up a Target chain in Washington, or I want to open up a Walmart or a Costco, I now have to take in the risk factor of having my business broke into. And then my insurance company has to take that in as well, Producer Anderson. My insurance company says, well, if you want to open a Costco in, I don't know, Bellevue,
yeah,
sure. But if you want to open one in downtown Seattle, not that they would.
Right.
Not that they would. But then they would say, oh, we probably can't. We're probably, your insurance is going to be what? Your deductible is going to be what? It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Huge. So I wonder if people really thought that through when you talk about defunding the police. You're not just talking about defunding the police. You're going to be affecting small business owners like the people at Steepology, which, by the way, I can't tell if it's Steepology or Steepology.
As a Seattle shopper, I don't even know how to really say that. Business's name. I think it is Steepology, to be honest. I think I've heard it said like that a few times.
So the article goes on to say that not all Seattle businesses echo Steepology's concerns, yeah, and several have supported an effort to defund the police with an eye on more holistic public safety measures. That includes the popular International District coffee shop Hood Famous Cafe and Bar, which, along with Belltown's Neon Boots, have recently explored alternatives to calling the cops to de-escalate conflict when there is a disturbance. I would say, yeah, if you would actually, here's an idea, Producer Anderson. What if we had a force out there where some of the people were there for policing, and then a certain percentage of them were like social workers, and they were kind of like the police. What if there was some mass, and they all had cars and matching uniforms?
Maybe they don't all have guns or something.
Maybe, but the point I'm trying to make is why not increase funding to the police so that they can hire more social workers who are then protected by the police? So let's say one of these businesses, homeless person walks in talking nonsense, talking Looney Tunes. They can call a social worker to come in and say, hey, what's going on? And if that individual becomes violent, then the police are already there.
Yeah.
I don't see why this is such a crazy idea. People are talking like I'm talking about getting Pegasus or a unicorn on the police force when I say, just put a couple social workers on the payroll and get those people moving.
To be fair, I think that is kind of the idea with what, I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong. This is pretty much speculation here, but I think that's kind of the idea with the whole 911 service. They want to make that a little bit more public service, less police. So I guess they're just going to disassociate that from the SPD, make it a governmental entity in that sort of sense, run by the city. But now with all of those kind of changes being proposed, I guess what you're kind of saying is you would rather have all of those under the umbrella of the SPD, but you could still like decipher between what types of officers are between those situations.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Would make sense. And that way you would have one leadership and one group that they're all looking for and have one goal that they're going to, you know, have for the entire force. And they don't have to deal with the multiple, like, I don't know how they're going to have, now that they are the NAV teams, where they go out and sweep through all the homeless camps, I don't know how they're going to be able to do that now, because they have to have like a third party source come in and do that job for them. So I'm sure the coordinating is not going to be all as smooth as it was before. So just more organizations that get involved in all of these things just leads to more kind of all that kind of confusion.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Producer Anderson. You're listening to Cairo Nights. When we come back, I've got good news about babies. That's what we got in the good news for you. What do you think? What kind of babies do you think I'm talking about, Producer Anderson?
I'm talking about
big ones.
Like our age babies?
No, close.
Okay.
Close.
Okay.
you're going to have to stick around to find out. You're listening to Cairo Nights. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back after this. Cairo Nights, good news, good news. Before we get to the good news, this is good news. A text message made me laugh out loud during the break. It says, every time you say Producer Anderson, it makes me think that you are high and trying to remind yourself what you're doing.
Really?
Hilarious.
Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Yeah, 360, that is a funny, funny text message. We were going to talk about baby elephants in Kenya.
Yes.
140 of them have been born since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, and that's good news. But what's even more amazing news is that Mr. Frank Shires, proud father,
yes,
said goodbye to his baby girl.
She for whom the sun both rises and sets.
That's Shakespeare for everybody, in case you don't know.
Oh, yes.
Frank Shires, tell me what happened. Break it down for me. I want to know.
Well, Sarah was a late summer baby, so her birthday is actually August 20th, and I say that because today is the first day in 18 years, basically, that I haven't had that little devil ruling my life. And she's down in Florida. She's going to swim Division I with the University of North Florida, and they are still open because you can't remote learn a swim team. And so she's down there with her mom getting settled. She's going to move in, I don't think tomorrow. She moves in the day after tomorrow. So it's a big deal.
I'm happy for you, because that's amazing. As a dad, I mean, I don't have children, you know, but I can picture myself, you know, if I'm Frank Shires, I have the voice of a broadcasting god.
Oh, God.
I've raised my beautiful daughter, and now I, like a little bird, I just get to let her go back out into the big world to swim D1, by the way, which as a former swimmer is like the top of the top, tippity top, D1 swimming. How fast is she, Frank Shires?
She's pretty fast. She's not, you know, she's not one of the fastest kids in the state. Those people are absolute. They're mutants, I'm sure. But she's a solid. How would you say it? She's a fast swimmer and a solid competitor. And she does some things very quickly and some things not so much. But she's, yeah. I mean, she's not. I don't know how to say it other than she's a good, solid member of a team. How's that?
That's good, Frank. I actually had the problem of negative buoyancy. That's why I never
you couldn't get underwater, huh?
Well, so the front half of me floats. I'm like perfectly. And then the bottom half of me sinks.
Yeah. Straight down.
I look like an L swimming across a pool. It's really unpleasant.
You should have been a water polo is what it sounds like.
I just could. Those guys were bigger, though, and they were tough, and they were throwing punches. And, you know, water polo guys were, like, the cool guys. I was on the swim team with, the chess kids. And, like, the, we could never be, we could never compete with the water polo guys.
You know, Frank, but, it's something to say about, I always think about, you know, swimming is, like, kind of a more individual sport. But you mentioned she's a member of the team. I think that kind of goes overlooked a lot of the time, especially in swimming.
It's true, and it's really intriguing that UNF has a program that is building. It's getting better and better. They're going to build a brand new break ground and a brand new swim complex with a huge pool. And I just, you know, it sounds like a good fit for her. But, excuse me, it's still 3,000 miles away.
Oh, yeah,
away.
The exact opposite end. When are you going to see her next?
I just saw her about 20 minutes ago. I did my second FaceTime.
Nice.
She called me with FaceTime tonight, which is an amazing technology. And so I got to see her.
Nice.
Which is, you know, I think that's going to make it easier for her to be.
Is she
going to
be home for Thanksgiving?
We don't know.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, they're going through the same thing that everybody else is going through. They may not have any meets per se this fall. And then the question becomes at Thanksgiving and Christmas, if she leaves, does she have to quarantine when she comes back?
Speaking of,
yes,
we're going to be talking about quarantine madness and COVID-19 madness when we get back.
Excellent.
That's exactly the topic we're going to be talking about, Mr. Frank Shires. I do want to say this, though, Frank. I'm very happy for you. As someone who has worked with you, I'm very, very happy for you, and I'm very happy for your daughter, and I wish her all the best. You're listening to Cairo Nights. We got to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about COVID-19, but not in the way that you think. I think that there are new symptoms coming out from COVID-19. I got a theory on how we can work on that. Listening to Cairo Nights, going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.